Medical Ontology is an overview. This is mainly about the UMLS semantic network through the perspective of somebody who comes to this field afresh. And it's useful, I think, to distinguish between three levels of ontology. This distinction will be familiar to many of you. On the one hand, at the very top, there is what you might think of as formal or top-level ontology, which deals with things like objects, events, wholes, parts, and other notions which are to be found in every domain, not just in medicine, not just in biology, but in geography or politics or physics. Then you have specific domain ontologies, which are of the same size and complexity as top-level ontologies, but which are specific to given domains. And the domain ontology of medicine would include nodes or terms like cell, gene, drug, disease, therapy, and so on. And then finally, we have terminology-based ontologies, which are very large. And, IFOMIS, which is the institution where I and Jonathan Simon hail, is an institution set up in Leipzig. It's made of philosophers and of medical and biological people and informaticians, and we are attempting to build and test a formal ontology based on what we think are sound philosophical principles in the biomedical domain. So we're trying to produce the top-level domain ontology for medicine and biomedicine. And that means we're going to use principles which have been tried and tested in philosophy for two purposes primarily. One is quality assurance in biomedical ontologies, and this is part of what Mariana will be talking about later. And the other is alignment or integration of biomedical ontologies. Now we can compare this three-level view with the distinction between pure and applied mathematics on the one hand, and then various applied sciences like physical chemistry and biophysics on the other hand. The nice thing about pure mathematics is that once you've proved a theorem, you don't need to prove it again whenever you use it in a different domain. You can reuse the same theorems and the same proofs and the same definitions over and over again in new areas. So we have the mathematical theory of groups, or the mathematical theory of vector spaces, or the mathematical theory of topological spaces, and these theories are used over and over again in specific material domains. Now, we all know what two and three are in the domain of medical informatics. Three is UMLS, SNOMED, and so on. Two is the UMLS semantic network, the Galen core, and so on. But what is one? So what is the formal top-level ontology of the medical domain? Well, I don't know. It seems that medical ontology has nothing like the technology of definitions, theorems, and proofs, which we know of from the realm of pure and applied mathematics. And this might be a problem. It might be a necessity. It might be that there's something special about the medical domain which rules out this sort of formal rigor. Now, the strategy is I'm going to provide an overview of medical ontologies and of the top-level ontologies which they implicitly define in the first part, and then I'm going to show how we can derive some principles of classification and definition which might look a bit like the pure mathematical counterpart of the biomedical domain, and then hint and indicate how they might be used for quality assurance and ontology alignment. And then Mariana and Jonathan will come in and give more details about these two areas. So this is part of the UMLS semantic network, and it has all sorts of virtues. So I'm mainly going to be talking about non-virtues. This is the top level of the UMLS semantic network, and I'm particularly perturbed by some of the non-virtues which fall below this node. From a philosophical perspective, very many of the problems which seem to arise in the biomedical ontology domain have to do with so-called conceptual entities. and with very strange uses of the word concept. So far, I have not used the word concept once. I just mentioned it twice, but I haven't used it. So we have conceptual entities, and one subclass of conceptual entities in the UMLS semantic network is called idea or concept. And one subclass of idea or concept is called spatial concept, and one subclass of spatial concept is called geographic area. Now what this means is that Fairfax County is an idea or concept. Now this doesn't look right to me. And we can ask why Fairfax County is a conceptual entity for the UMLS semantic network. I believe that there is a reason. And this reason has to do with the fact that Fairfax County is, on the one hand, extended in space, but on the other hand, its boundaries are not determined physically. They're determined by human fiat. And if you look through those things which are classified in the UMLS as spatial concepts, then they satisfy both of these criteria. They are not physical, it is said, because they do not have physical boundaries. But this is not carried through consistently. Hand is exactly like Fairfax County, but hand is classified by the UMLS as a physical object. And there are many such uncertainties. And these uncertainties are illustrated by some of the reasoning which we get to do when we use the UMLS semantic network. So we have gene or genome is part of the cell component, and we have body system is a conceptual part of a fully formed anatomical structure. Now, why do we have conceptual part of between a body system and a fully formed anatomical structure, but just plain part of between gene and cell component? So why this? Well, a body system is a conceptual entity for the UMLS semantic network. In fact, a body system is a functional concept. But so is the gene, or rather the gene too is a conceptual entity, because according to the UMLS semantic network, a gene is a specific sequence of nucleotides, and a nucleotide sequence is a conceptual entity. Because a nucleoside sequence, too, has no physical boundaries. A nucleotide sequence has a boundary created by, according to this way of thinking, the human classifier. So body systems are conceptual entities. Body systems are, in fact, functional concepts. I think that it's wrong to suppose that concepts perform functions or have physical parts. So I think that it's wrong to conceive this thing as a concept. But since a gene is as a concept too, then we can't even use this reasoning to explain why it is that we have a simple part of relation between gene and cell component, but a conceptual part of relation between body system and fully formed anatomical structure. I think the solution to this problem is, in fact, very simple. We just identify all part-of relations as being simple, plain, vanilla part-of relations, and we abandon the idea that there is a special part-of relation called conceptual part-of. And I see absolutely no downside to this simplification. So this is not a concept. Another problem with the UMLS semantic network has to do with the confusion of is a and has role. So we find this. There are two sorts of chemicals. Chemicals viewed structurally and chemicals viewed functionally. A chemical viewed structurally is a chemical entity, and a chemical viewed functionally is a chemical entity, according to this way of thinking. There is a grain of truth in this way of thinking, but there is also a serious error. Chemicals viewed structurally are not different kinds of chemicals from chemicals viewed functionally. They are chemicals viewed through different classificatory spectacles. So So this distinction here does not reflect a distinction between types of entity, but between types of classification, between what later on we'll be calling partitions. You can partition the world of chemicals functionally, or you can partition the world of chemicals structurally. And a good ontology of chemicals will give you the power to do both of those things and to navigate between those two partitions in relation to the chemicals themselves. But to put those two together is like classifying people according to whether they're tall people or play tennis or look small from a distance. And the same problem is illustrated here. These are not three different kinds of entity. These are three different ways of classifying specific sub-regions of the entire domain of substances. So a box used for storage is not a special kind of box. A protein storage vacuole is not a special kind of vacuole. And an animal belonging to the emperor is not a special kind of animal. Another problem illustrated by the hydraulic equation, which tells us that arterial blood pressure is directly proportional to the product of blood flow and peripheral vascular resistance. According to the UMLS semantic network, blood pressure is an organism function, and cardiac output is either a laboratory or test result or a diagnostic procedure. So the hydraulic equation tells us that blood pressure is proportional either to a laboratory or test result or to a diagnostic procedure. And it seems to me, as a naive philosopher, that this is not quite right. This is not what people are talking about when they're talking about the hydraulic equation. And this is because we have here a confusion between ontology, which is about the stuff out there and the processes out there, and epistemology, which is about our measurements of the stuff or our knowledge of the stuff. And the UMLS semantic network confuses those two disciplines. This confusion is present here too. Disease history is classified under healthcare activity. But a disease history can either mean the course of a disease, which is ontology, or it can mean the act of eliciting the history of the disease. And this can only be defined in terms of that. We can only elicit a history if there is something ontological to elicit. But the UMLS semantic network doesn't allow us to recognize the distinction between the act of eliciting and the object which gets elicited. Now, the UMLS distinguishes between entities and events, and this is familiar in philosophical history as the distinction between continuance and endurance. Continuance are those things which continue to exist identically through time, like organisms or cells or molecules. Occurrent entities are those things which unfold themselves in time. They exist in their successive phases. They have beginnings, middles, and ends. Organisms don't have beginnings, middles, and ends. Their lives have beginnings, middles, and ends. Another distinction is that between, and this distinction gets pretty close to the distinction between conceptual entity and physical object within the semantic network, is that between dependent and independent entities. So dependent entities are those entities which require some other entity in order to exist. There's no color without something which is colored, and there's no mass without something which has mass, and there's no motion without something which moves. And in each case, the something is the independent entity. It's the substrate for the quality or disposition or function or motion, all of which are dependent entities. Now, if we put together these two dichotomies between continuance and occurrence and dependent and independent entities, then we get a threefold classification, since all processes are dependent. We have independent continuance, like organisms, dependent continuance, like roles, functions, conditions, and we have occurrence, processes, histories, and lives. This is just the stuff out there. Epistemology, findings, measurements, all of those things come later. This is what all of those things are directed towards. And then we have to distinguish also between classes of these things and instances of those classes, which is a distinction which is very often neglected in medical ontologies. as we shall see. Now, this three-category ontology is not quite a standard, but it's pretty well accepted amongst those groups of ontologists who work within a broadly realist and principles-based methodology. So it's accepted, for instance, by Dolce, which is the first WonderWeb foundational ontology of the semantic web. It's the basis of the basic formal ontology in Buffo. It's accepted in its way by the UMLS semantic network, and it's accepted in its way also by Go, the gene ontology. Now, it's pretty much accepted too by Galen. So Galen has a distinction, which I think is certainly pointing in the right direction, between two kinds of independent continuants, namely structures and substances. Some versions of Galen talk about concepts here, which is, of course, a confusion between ontology and epistemology. The reason why the word concept is so problematic is because it spans the boundary between the stuff out there and the process out there and what goes on in our minds when we understand and measure that stuff. But in some versions of Galen, the terminology is more appropriate, I think. That these things are called aspects. It's the same trichotomy as the one I presented earlier. But Galen does other things which I think are less successful. So Galen has a class called generalized structure, which has a subclass called logical structure, which has a subclass called system, which has a subclass called functional system, which has a subclass called body system, which has a subclass called functional system, which has a subclass called immune system, which means that the immune system for Galen is a logical structure, and this seems to me to be somehow wrong. And it's wrong in the same sort of way that Fairfax County as a spatial concept is wrong. It confuses, in this case, not ontology and epistemology, but rather ontology and logic. This is the Galen core, which it has something called top thing up there, and then it has domain categories, domain attributes, that's fine perhaps. Then it has phenomena, which it defines as those categories which can be observed, and here we get the real stuff, the continuance and the occurrence and the aspect. So this is where the stuff is. But now Galen said the stuff is called phenomena, and the phenomenon Galen defines as those categories which can be observed. Now, of course, that's wrong. You can't observe categories. You observe instances of categories. So the builders of Galen maybe had special powers of observation, but I cannot see categories. Now, SNOMED has this. This is the top thing for SNOMED, namely SNOMED CT concept. The whole universe, the whole galaxy, is subclasses of SNOMED CT concept. And in this list of the subclasses, which you see has no intrinsic structure at all, we get things like context-dependent categories, the special kinds of categories, or we get special concepts. Now, a good top-level ontology is going to bring you lots of benefits. A bad one is going to bring you lots of errors. You're going to make mistakes. Why are you going to make mistakes? Well, because you won't know how to train the people who are populating your database. It's an unintuitive top level is also going to bring obstacles to aligning your database with the ontologies of other databases. Not only because of the errors, but also because your top level is going to have intrinsic problems, which will mean that you can't find the points within your ontology where you can glue it to someone else's ontology. Both of these things are clearly obstacles to the harvesting of content via automatic reasoning systems. You have to use human beings, which defeats the whole purpose of biomedical informatics. And that's the end of part one. So now we have 6 minutes for revenge. Yes.
Find out
how it maps the world. One last question. All right, now part two is called Principles for Building Medical Ontologies. And we've already met some such principles. Don't confuse entities with concepts. Don't confuse domain entities with logical structures. Don't confuse ontology with epistemology. Don't confuse is-a with has-role. I'm going to talk about two sorts of principles for building ontologies. One, we can think of as being methodological principles. Don't confuse concepts with entities. It's a methodological principle. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about some formal principles, which I think should constrain the work we do. And these are principles which have some sort of mathematico-logical structure. So, another principle, univocity. Terms should have the same meanings and thus point to the same reference on every occasion of use. The UMLS semantic network uses the term organization sometimes to mean a body plan and sometimes to mean a social organization. The UMLS semantic network is not actually too bad in this respect. The gene ontology, which breaks all of these principles, the gene ontology doesn't even understand the notion of univocity. It doesn't understand why that might be important. And that's because it was built by biologists who can point to the biological phenomena that they're interested in and thereby come to an understanding. But you can't point to biological phenomena in order to bring a computer to the point where it can reason about that biological phenomena. And that's what the gene ontology surely should be about. So, the gene ontology has two basic foundational relations. Is-a, which I now think it doesn't understand either, and part of, which it certainly doesn't understand. It uses part of with at least three different meanings, which I won't go through. But that means that the very core of the gene ontology is that the glue which holds it together is not one sort of glue as it thinks it is. So, another rule which the gene ontology violates and which the semantic network also violates, although less egregiously, is don't ignore instances. So just as we can't perceive categories, but only instances. So very many of the relations that we're talking about only make sense if we take instances into account. So the relation part of as a relation between classes is in fact only capable of being defined if you take instances into account. So when you say A is part of B, then what you mean is either one of two things or some logical combination thereof. You either mean every instance of A is an individual instance-level part of some instance of B, or you mean every instance of B has some instance of A as part. Now, they are, in fact, two different relations, and the difference between these two relations is, generally speaking, not recognized by biomedical ontologies using part of as a glue to hold classes together. So, the part-of relation between classes is actually more problematic than we normally suppose. Is it true that testis is part of human beings? Shall we take a vote? Is it true that heart is part of human being? How many people would say yes to that? Well, what about pig's hearts, ladies and gentlemen? A pig's heart is a heart. Well, some human beings. Now, let's take this distinction between A part of B and B has A as part. It doesn't just apply to part of, it applies to very many other relations. So, if we take the relation of preventing, the UMLS semantic network defines the inverse of preventing as prevented by. And it seems that there is a problem here. How are we going to understand this in terms of instances? An instance of contraception prevents what? And what is it which is prevented by an instance of contraception? It's not an instance of pregnancy. This is a real problem which the UMLS semantic network does not allow us to recognize. And another analogous case would be produces. So artificial insemination produces pregnancy, but it's not the case that the inverse of produces here is just produced by, because it's not true that pregnancy is produced by artificial insemination any more than it's true that testis is part of human being. Another rule, positivity. Complements of classes are not themselves classes. So terms such as non-mammal or non-membrane do not designate natural kinds. This rule too is violated by the gene ontology almost everywhere. Objectivity. Which classes exist is not a function of our biological knowledge. So terms such as unknown or unclassified or unlocalized do not designate biological natural kinds. Nor do terms like named. To be named is not to have a special biological feature or role or function, nor is it to constitute a special kind of biological entity. Another set of rules have to do with levels. Now, here I should point out, as I will be repeating again later, that this rule is one of those rules which it's almost impossible to satisfy. But that doesn't mean that we should ignore it. It's a rule that we should aim to satisfy, because wherever we do not satisfy it, we're liable to make errors. Or at least this seems to be empirically the case. So, one rule governing levels is that the terms in a classificatory hierarchy should be divided into levels in the way in which standard biological classifications are divided into kingdom, phylum, class, order, and so on. And similarly, the terms in a partonomic hierarchy should be divided into predetermined granularities, like the organism level, the organ level, the cell level, the molecular level, and so on. This rule is more often respected than this rule. Now, the reason why these rules about levels are important is because probably the most important rule governing good classificatory practices is the JEPD rule. A good classification should be jointly exhaustive and pairwise disjoint. If you get that, you can sleep soundly in your beds. In biology, it's very hard to get, mainly because exhaustiveness is hard to get. But disjointness is easy. But still, disjointness is not something which builders of biomedical ontologies always care about. So, disjointness is just another word for single inheritance. Single inheritance says that no class in a classificatory hierarchy should have more than one parent on the immediate higher level. When by parent, I mean is a parent. Exhaustiveness says that the classes on any given level should exhaust the domain. So whatever it is that you're trying to classify, you're not done until you've classified it all on every level. That's a rule which all science accepts tacitly. And it's a good rule. The JEPD rule is a good rule, as is proved by the fact that wherever you find shortfalls from the JEPD rule, then you're likely to find bad coding. And the reason for that is that you get multiple inheritance only if you're using some deviation from the straightforward ISA relation between biological kinds. And as soon as you get those deviations, then you're blocking ontology alignment. Because if you mean one thing by ISA and your friend means seven other things by ISA, and you put his ontology together with your ontology thinking that you all mean the same thing by ISA, then you won't get ontology alignment. You will just get a mess. So the success of ontology alignment depends on sharing the same understanding of basic foundational ontological relations like ISA and PASOF. And the use of multiple inheritance involves the assignment to the is-are relation of different meanings within one and the same ontology, and then the resultant mélange makes coherent integration across ontologies achievable at best only under the guidance of human beings with relevant biological knowledge, which again defeats the purpose of biomedical informatics. Now, some rules for definitions. Now, the first rule is intelligibility. The terms used in a definition should be simpler, which means, for instance, more intelligible than the term to be defined. You don't use more complex words in order to give definitions of simpler words. This rule is broken consistently by the gene ontology. And the reason why this is a good rule is twofold. First of all, for human beings, you can't understand a definition unless it satisfies this rule. But secondly, machines can't process a definition unless it satisfies this rule or some analog thereof. Another rule is substitutability. So there are extensional contexts, which are contexts not involving mental verbs like John believes that, or Mary thinks that, or Frank hopes that. They're just simple contexts. So in all simple contexts, a defined term should be substitutable by its definition in such a way that the result is both grammatically correct and has the same truth value as the sentence with which we begin. So Go defines toxin activity. This is actually a relatively clear example of a Go definition. Toxin activity is defined as acts so as to cause injury to other living organisms. So let's test this by the rule of substitutivity. There is toxin activity here becomes there is acts as to cause injury to other living organisms here. And that's not even grammatical. And that means it's not a good definition. Another rule for definitions is modularity. Go thinks that you can define everything. Go thinks you should have a definition for every single term. Now, you can't define everything. Aristotle already pointed this out. You have to have some things which you already understand before you start defining. Otherwise, you can never start defining. Now, what this means in formal terms is that we have to isolate a level of primitives, that is to say, undefined terms, which we can call level zero. And then for each level above level zero, we define the terms on that level by using terms taken from the levels below, together with logical and ontological terms like and, all, is, are, and part of. So this is, again, it's a rule for good definitional hygiene. And it means that that computers can process such definitions automatically. It means that you can harvest the definitions in the way that you can't harvest the definitions of Go using automatic reasoning tools. Now, if these rules are not satisfied, then error checking on ontology alignment can be achieved again, at best, only with human intervention. Now, there is a counterexample to all of these tales of misery and woe, which is the foundational model of anatomy, which goes a long way to satisfying all of these rules, partly because it was inspired by Aristotle. So, for Aristotle, a definition is the specification of the essence or nature or invariant structure shared by all the members of a class or natural kind. And in the foundational model of anatomy, the topmost nodes count as undefined primitives, and then all the classes lower down in the hierarchy are defined successively in terms of the next highest class. And we do this by taking the relevant class, the relevant parent class, and specifying the differentia, which tells us what marks out instances of the defined class within this wider parent class. So here we have human. The wider parent class is animal, and the differentia is rational. This is Aristotle's example. The foundational model of anatomy gives examples like this. A cell is an anatomical structure, that's the parent class, and then the differentia is expressed by means of this clause here. Or a plasma membrane is a cell part that surrounds the cytoplasm. These both satisfy Aristotle's rules for formulating definitions, and they also satisfy the rules which I set forth earlier. Now this regimentation brings the advantage that each definition reflects the position in the hierarchy to which the defined term belongs. So the definitions track the structure of the hierarchy. So we have now not just a controlled vocabulary, but we have a controlled vocabulary with extra machinery which helps us to test whether the vocabulary is doing its job, namely of mapping the hierarchical organization of the classes on the side of reality. And the position of the term within the hierarchy enriches the definition of the term in a way which computers can also harvest. And that means that the entire information content of the FMA's term hierarchy can be translated, all of it, including the definitions, much more cleanly than in some of the other cases I've been talking about, into a computer regimentation. Now recall that all of the rules I've just mentioned are not rules which are going to be easy to satisfy. Biomedical research is a world of trade-offs. What I'm suggesting is that we start to take much more seriously the sorts of scrupulousness, logical and ontological scrupulousness, that I've been talking about. We're going to have to balance that against the constraints of computer tractability. If you have a logic which is too powerful, then that means that the information content that this logic is carrying is going to be too great to be supported by real-time reasoning implementations. And it's also going to have to be balanced against the needs of biomedical practitioners. So we need to build practical biomedical ontology. But I can't imagine that either of these two constraints is going to affect the basic principle, namely, that not following these rules over and over again leads systematically to bad coding, to errors, inconsistencies. Now, but more importantly still, we want computer tractability so that we can do biomedical informatics. And if we want to do biomedical informatics, rather than have human biologists glue ontologies together by hand on the basis of secret knowledge, then that means we need automatic alignment of large biomedical information resources. And automatic alignment can only be achieved if your ontologies and your controlled vocabularies satisfy rules like I've presented, very much like I've presented, perhaps all, exactly the rules I've presented. Now, that's the methodological part. Very quickly, I'll just introduce the formal part. This is a fragment of a logic of biomedical classification. I'm not going to go through this in detail. I'll just give you one or two examples. So these are some of the simpler axioms of this thing. Every class has at least one instance. Distinct classes on the same level never share instances. Notice that this is different from the rule of single inheritance. The rule of single inheritance says that distinct classes on the same level never share the same subclass. There are never any hierarchies that meet in a diamond form. This says that distinct classes never share the same instances, and the two are not logically equivalent. And then another rule, axiom, which is not logically equivalent to this, although very similar, is that distinct leaf classes never share instances. And then every genus has some instantiated species. Each species has a smaller class of instances than its genus, where the notion of species just means a class lower than a genus. And every genus has at least two children. The UMLS semantic network has this little thing here, which breaks that rule. And this is another example of how breaking one of these rules points out errors. That's an error. And then from the axioms, we can derive various theorems. And again, I'm just giving you a couple of examples of theorems. So every instance is also an instance of some leaf class. Classes which share a child in common are either identical or one is subordinate to the other. And this whole thing generates a mathematical structure which is a supremum semilattice with respect to the is-are relation. It generates a more complicated structure once you take the part-of relation into account, and then also when you take other relations into account, like has role and so on. Now, the system I've just flashed in your direction is a logic of biomedical classification. Now, many people, when confronted with the idea that one might need such a logic, will respond by saying, surely we already know what the logic of classification is. It's standard mathematical set theory.